Welcome to Desert Island Strips. I'm your host, Nasty Canasta. My castaway on the island today is a storyteller, host, producer, performer, teacher, and writer who was born and raised in the wilds of South Jersey. He's been a high school history teacher, a bar bouncer, and an ice cream truck driver, and he now resides in Queens with his lovely wife. He is a Moth Grand Slam champion and instructor for the Moth Shop Community Education Program. He regularly hosts, performs, and produces storytelling and burlesque around New York City, as well as hosting the Unchained Tour throughout the South. He's also the lead singer of the BTK Band, New York City's hardest-drinking improvised storytelling rock band. And he loves his mom. Please welcome to the island, Peter Aguero.
Hello.
Hello. You have a background in improv.
Yeah.
You studied in Trova, Chicago City Limits,
mm-hmm.
and in stage theater, and around these parts. You're particularly known for your storytelling as well. So how did you, what was the progression from improv and theater into storytelling?
Well, it was about 2002 I was living in Trenton, New Jersey, and I started taking improv classes at Chicago City Limits. I started taking those classes. It was coming in, it was like an hour and a half each way on the train. I was hungry, you know? And I did their classes for about a year, and then I auditioned for their touring company. I got in, and I did that for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I got to travel a lot. I went to 37 states, and it was on somebody else's dime.
Yeah.
So that was really great.
I did that years ago with a play. It was
fun, you know? And you get to go to these, like, really rabid audiences that really want to see something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, these are people that bought their tickets, you know, 4 months beforehand and got a haircut before the show. You know what I mean? And it was great. Improv was fun, but I never really liked it as a end game. I always thought it was a great tool.
Yeah, yep.
You know, and so I learned a lot. But early on, I realized that a lot of the people that I hung out with were like, so what do you do? And they were all like, I'm an improviser. And that's it. So I was like, that's not, I want to do more. So then I started doing scene study at T. Schreiber, like studying acting for the stage and auditioning for their plays. And I did that for, that was probably another 4 years. And it was great because, it was about diversifying myself. And in that time, I was, going on auditions for, commercials and stuff like that. And it was cool. But I still wasn't quite what I was supposed to do yet, right? So,
I know exactly what you mean.
yep. I mean, you're always, like, searching for the thing. Like, where's the thing? And you don't know it until you get it, you know? So, there was one tour I was in Fallon, Nevada. In the middle of nowhere, and after the show, we were supposed to do a meet and greet thing, and I hate doing those.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to the hotel with my buddy Carter, and we were just drinking whiskey in my room, and he asked me a question about, why don't you like to share a room? And I just launched into this story about, like, a road trip I took with a girl, and it was so, like, tangentially answering his question, but, like, it was, at the end, he was like, you should tell stories. And I was like, well, how the hell, I mean, I've always told stories, but, like, how the hell do you do that? And he was like, there's this thing called the Moth. So, it was months later, I'd, like, put it in the back of my head.
Yeah.
I went to go see my friend Morgan's band at the Bitter End, and I was late, so I missed this set. And I was waiting for him to clean up, and I was out front, and I saw on the calendar, it said, the Moth, storytelling. And, I was like, I remember that. So, like, I went home, I looked it up online, and by this time I had moved to New York, and I'm living in Queens with my wife. So I look up The Moth on their website, and it was a rudimentary website at that point, but they had a couple stories, and I listened to them, and I was like, I can do this. So I went, like, it was like, this is easy. So I went back the next week, and they do it as, it's a slam, they do it as a lottery, so you put your name in a hat, they pull 10 names.
Oh.
So I got picked second. And it was probably, 180 people in there. It was packed. And I told the story. It was terrible. It was awful. The theme was fright. And the first lines I said on stage at this, like, now venerated NPR, like, institution, the first thing I said was, I like to put my balls on things. And it was a story about how I would, like, when I go to someone's house, I would, like, find a ruler and, like, put my balls on the ruler and put it back. And, like, not, and I wouldn't tell him. It was just, like, for me. So, like, it was like a, like, you know, like a dog pissing in on territory. So I told the story, and then, like, in the end of the story, this a woman I worked with got mad that I was doing that, and she was going to sue me, and I was terrified. So, but the story was awful. Uh-huh. There was no story there, you know? It was just about balls. So after the show, though, the producer, Jen Hickson, came up to me, and she was like, that story was awful, but you should come back. Mm-hmm. Like, you have something there. So I did, and I started going to every show. You know, twice a month, I wrote a brand new story. It made me write a new story. And, like, so for a year and a half, I went to every show. I was, like, going to class. And, like, every night, even if I didn't get picked, I would hear 10 stories.
Yeah.
So I would hear what works and what doesn't. You know, structure would start to subconsciously make its way in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started volunteering for the teaching program they have, the Martial Arts Community Program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, there was no training. I just, like, showed up, and I was at an AmeriCorps self-advocacy group near Tribeca, and mm-hmm. it was a bunch of people with mental disabilities, a traumatic brain injury, stuff like that, and like there was this guy Frank D'Amico, and he was like, he just split the group in half, he was like, you take them.
Wow.
So it was sink or swim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had all these nebulous ideas of what stories were, and because I had to then teach them, I had to label them and teach them to myself so I could teach them to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it was amazing. Once I started doing that and understanding stories, then, like, I started winning the slams.
Right.
So I won, like, there was some crazy stretch where I won, like, 3 out of 5 that I did. And, like, and it was awesome. And so, like, there weren't many shows,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, we all got to know each other. And
yeah.
we were doing each other's shows. And now, man, you know.
It, like, seems like a pretty extensive community.
There's,
now.
Like, 40 regular shows.
That's amazing.
In town. And, you know, so, I mean, you think about it, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then within that, once I started telling stories, it just, like, that was the thing that clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt good doing it. I felt like it was the right thing for me. It felt like there's an immediate connection between me and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great, you know. So that's how I got to tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
I guess moving forward to that, the thing that got me, that kept me interested was how to, like, once I realized what the form was, how do I break the form?
Yep.
So,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's easy, let's make it hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's when I got the idea. One night I was coming home from a moth slam, and I was listening to Nighthawks at the Diner,
mm-hmm.
Tom Waits' album. And the last song on there was called Big Joe and the Phantom 309. And it was a short story by a guy named Red Sovine, and he tells a story over music.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's amazing, because the rhythm of the music and the rhythm of the voice. And so I started this thing called the BTK Band, and that was, I mean, damn, 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had our last show, you know, in December. But that was, you know, like, what happens if we take stories and send them to music and it's all improvised? So it was like taking the improv and the musical improv that I already knew how to do, and the storytelling I was learning how to do, and jamming those together.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing what would happen. And, you know, that was really, I don't know, it was, you know, it was 6 years, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it was also, some of the work we did was just beautiful, because you didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really cool.
That's really lovely.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Let's take a break from the history and hear about the first number that you're going to load into the lifeboat with mm-hmm. you.
So the first one is, all right, Mary Sinn has this act. It doesn't really have a name. I call it the Tightrope Act.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a show that I do called Bear,
mm-hmm.
and it takes stories and burlesque and jams those together,
mm-hmm.
just like BTK, the stories and the music. So I've been doing the show for, I guess, about 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and on and off, just a couple times a year, because it's really work. It's intensive.
Yeah,
you know. And so the way that works is that the storyteller and a burlesque performer go off and, like, figure out a really raw story.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the stories I like, the ones that are really difficult to tell.
Yeah.
And they're hard. It's hard to find a place to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that no one has the balls to do a show that is all bummers,
mm-hmm.
you know. So you don't want to be the one bummer on the bill, you know. So this is, you know, I figured, well, this is a place where everybody can do it, so no one's out of place.
Mm-hmm.
So they go, and the storyteller figures out a story, but that performer figures out an act that would comment on the themes of that story emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be a recreation of each other or anything. Then we do the show, and there's the story is told, and then the burlesque act happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I like is the storyteller, like I said, doesn't have to worry about being funny or entertaining. They can just be truthful. And then the burlesque performer can not have to worry about being sexy or erotic or have
shiny.
To or shiny
yeah.
or glittery or yeah. there's no rhinestones unless you want them. Like it's they can it can just be whatever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the show's called Bear because in essence I figure everybody's you know bearing themselves. You mm-hmm. bear yourself with your words and you bear yourself with your body and it's really beautiful. So
it's an amazing. I mean it's just amazing. And from the other side of it as a performer that. You rarely get a chance to do those numbers as well.
Yeah. So this act in particular, might have been the third time I did Bear. I did it where I was telling all the stories and it was a cycle of stories all about my depression that I went through when I was 23, mm-hmm. where things got really bad. And my family always called it the Dark Days. So
mm-hmm.
I had a show called The Dark Days. So one of the, like, toward the end of the show was a story just about, it was the worst possible day
mm-hmm.
that could have happened. And it was just this like exercise in futility of like the day-to-day, you know, kind of struggles of depression and what you deal with every day and that you just wake up the next morning and fucking do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. So Mary Sin came up with this act where she's walking on a tightrope and it's really sparse lighting. She's her hair's wet, she's been crying, her makeup's running down her face, and she has just like a simple like white shift dress, like a little cotton dress, and she like is trying as hard as she can to just walk down this tightrope, and as she's stripping everything off of her to like give herself balance and nothing's happening, and then like at the end she falls off and it's this huge crash. It's halfway jumping, halfway falling. She's like crumpled on the side, and then she's dead, and then she comes back to life with this big gasp and then goes back to the top of the tightrope and starts walking down again.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, it's just like there's a blackout. It's like that cyclical thing of you know when you're in the middle of a depression then it just you there's no escape and
yep.
you just keep even when you think there's an escape like you know she jumps off but she still has to do it again.
I'm gonna miss you man but the bird can't fly and the asphalt's hot. You look up at the suit Claude, you're all I got. Well
and it's just it was it's gorgeous and it's the best representation I've seen, or one of the best representations I've seen of depression in a medium that you wouldn't expect it from.
That resonates hugely just hearing about it with me, too.
It's really powerful. Yeah. And Mary, I've been... she's in every...
Yeah, you work with her a lot.
I work with her a lot in Bear because she gets my... She gets my sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not afraid... to do something that is really depressing or to do something. She is fearless on stage. And I think like a lot of times I can be too. And I think that matches.
Yeah.
So every time I do that show, you know, at this point we have probably, I don't know, a dozen stories and acts together.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been redoing some of them lately and it's interesting to revisit some.
Do the, I know just from, doing repeating acts over the years that they do evolve. Do stories evolve as well?
Oh, absolutely.
How do they evolve?
A story, I believe, is a living, breathing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't write my stories and recite them. Like, I never, like, the most writing I do is maybe the first line, the last line, like an outline. And so, if you were to take a transcript of a story that I told, you know, 10 times, each time it would be different.
Mm-hmm.
There would be things that were the same. You could line up certain mile markers or turns of phrase or whatever, and that's the stuff that, like, keeps me on path. But the story itself, like, I always like to... I make decisions or I make choices or discoveries in the middle of a story.
Mm-hmm.
So a story will always evolve. So it's interesting to see... Well, we just repeated one over Christmas. It was, man, we did it a year... We did it last year for the Burlesque Blitz in the winter, and then we did it this year too. And I figure maybe we'll make it a Christmas tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the worst. It's like the story of this day the one that my parents had a physical confrontation, and it was the one time I ever saw that. And then we did an act in which, like, I'm my dad and Mary's my mom, and I beat the crap out of her. Mm-hmm. And it's awful. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels terrible. It's terrible to do.
And possibly a great Christmas tradition, honestly.
For Bear, you know, it works. But, like, it was doing it again this year. You know, I'd had a year to live with the material. Mm. That story became as part of a show I do called Daddy Issues. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've been looking at that material differently anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm a year older.
Yep.
You know, I have different perspective than I did, even slightly from a year. So it was very different to go back and revisit and, like, kind of play that role. Mm-hmm. It was very different. And it was just, you know, the act itself is it's vicious. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, when the lights go down, the audience doesn't applaud. It's such a weird feeling, but that's kind of cool. Like, to have a, you know, like, people come to a show and they're trained to have a certain response, and then to break that response, mm-hmm. is really interesting.
This
is
why
in Bear, you know, people have to, like, learn that it's not like you're trained in burlesque, like hoot and holler, mm-hmm. and this isn't really a show for that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to, you can. You know, like, it's okay, but it's just, you know, it's a different thing. It's difficult. But she, I mean, I call her the Kraken, because she just, like, she will just, if I ask her to go all the way with something, she just goes all the way. And we trust each other, you know. And at times she'll question, but I don't agree with this. And I'll say, well, this is why. And she'll think about it and agree or disagree, but it's a good partnership. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. It's I love working with her.
Yeah.
You know, I've known her for years. And that, I mean, that act to me, you know, it's not one that you're going to see anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but it's one that just, like, it embodies so much to me of what, like, the narrative of burlesque can be. Mm-hmm. And it's really powerful, mm-hmm. to me.
Now, I've only recently started working with some storytellers in the context of burlesque, mm-hmm. and even just in the context of storytelling, mm-hmm. and found myself trying to explain to somebody, you know, when I was doing a show, they're like, all right, I get that there's, you know, stories in burlesque, and sometimes they are related to each other, but what is storytelling?
Yeah.
And I was trying to describe it. I'm like, well, it's telling stories. I mean, it's, and it seems once you see it, it's very, like, well, it's telling
when
stories.
When you see it, yeah.
But
storytelling, and this storytelling is the oldest form of communication. Mm-hmm. So there's been storytelling throughout forever. Particularly in the U.S., there's a place called Jonesboro, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It's known as, like, the storytelling capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And they do a storytelling festival every year. And a lot of their stuff is folk tales, you know, fairy tales, family history, valid stories.
Yeah.
But what the moth does specifically is, like, true first person narrative.
Right. So that's what struck me very much about what I've been exposed to. And it's, they talk about, you know, just working with these things that can be so, you know, just incredibly important or just weighty to yourself, and trying to bring that out is
It can be difficult because you're zooming way in, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's not people's first instinct when they're like, okay, we're going to have you tell a story. They want to tell their whole life story in 7 minutes. And you have to say, no, just tell me about that one day,
mm-hmm.
and, or that one choice or that one decision. And it's difficult because then there's nothing to hide behind. When you're talking about the big, huge scope of your life, there's no detail there. But when you're talking about that one time where you fucked up really bad, mm-hmm. and it's your fault, there's nothing to hide behind. And, like, that, it's you know, everyone's familiar with an anecdote. Like, an anecdote, mm-hmm. is, here's this thing that happened to me. It's just simple. You know, like, I was on the F train, and there, you know, somebody dumped a cup of coffee on me, mm-hmm. right? But a story is, here's this thing that happened to me within the context of my life. And, mm-hmm. what that would be, I was on the F train, somebody dumped a cup of coffee on me, and it freaked me out because I was, you know, I was a burn victim when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it takes the anecdote and puts it within context, and that's what makes it a story.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult, but it's also, it can be really freeing because, like, you tell your story and it shines a light on the difficult thing,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it not so scary. Mm-hmm. And then you start to own it. Like, there's these stories about when I was going through what I did when I was 23, I never talked about them for, you know, 10, 12 years. And then when I started working on stories about them, I started to own that time of my life instead of it being a specter. It became something that like I was able to own and have some modicum of control and understanding mm-hmm. over. So it's really powerful that way. But in the last couple of years, people say, "What do you do?" I say, "I'm a storyteller." So I mean, now it's something that's understood. It's understood now a little more than it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the narrative arc, and I love that mm-hmm. it's a choice, it's always that. Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah.
Because you can lay a narrative arc on anything.
Yep.
So like that's how I got into burlesque. Really was. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how I started Bear, was that, you know, noticing after I got into burlesque and seeing how, you know, people were telling stories already, it wasn't just even the simplest act of you know, like a bunch of feathers and rhinestones, mm-hmm. it's still a story. But that character is someone. She came from somewhere and is going somewhere mm-hmm. after. And we're just looking at 3.5 minutes every day.
Yeah.
And she's in transition going from one place to another. And it's beautiful, you know. So what happened was, like, I went to go see Hotsy Totsy Burlesque. Mm-hmm. And I was, there was a train problem. And one of the performers couldn't make it. And Cindy and Joe the Shark were like, "Can you tell a story?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Sure." I don't know. Okay, so like I got up, I just like told the story of getting into a fight when I was an ice cream truck driver. Then Joe had me host or come and tell a story like at Original Sin, and then Femme Appeal had me come do something there, and then I started hosting at OC, and then hosting at Kitty Nights, and then I just got into it.
Snowballs,
and now I'm one of the girls, which I like. It's really nice. That's how Bear started, was seeing all the amazing performers mm-hmm. and like I some of it was selfish. I want to see if I can take this brain out of this context and put it in this one, what can this person come up with?
Yeah.
And like I've been consistently blown away.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. And that's how that all got started, and I love it.
You mentioned Femme Appeal, so tell me about the second act that you're going to throw on the lifeboat.
Man, Femme Appeal is a force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in the world like her. She's absolutely, like, I'm very lucky that I know a lot of people that are singular individuals that there's no one like, you know? I can put Femme in that category, too. I can put you in that category, put Mary in that category, you know? Like, there are certain people that there's nobody like them, and, like, that's so cool. Nobody knows, anyway, let's pat myself on the back for knowing awesome people. But, so, Femme does this act called, I guess, The Incredible Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, it's like a cooking show. It's so nuts. It's a cooking show that is hosted by the Incredible Hulk.
Get your master key, open up your door, set your servants free, or they won't come no more.
And so she's the Incredible Hulk cooking this pasta dish, and it's just as absurd as it sounds. Like it's like she's like goes back and forth from like, you know, going to like stirring pasta and like cutting up tomatoes, and like she paints her whole body green, her whole body shows up and hides before the show, so no one sees her, because she's all about the reveal.
Yep.
Your mantle's about to fall. Your grip's gonna come undone. Nobody hear you call. No doubt from anyone. I'm getting down off the rack. I'm taking this baby back.
And like, and she does this act, and I remember I've seen it maybe 3 times, and the first time I saw it, my jaw was on the floor, because this is what burlesque is and also could be. You know what I mean? Like it's so funny, and it's so smart, and it's so weird. And then there's like a stripping element to it, but she like adds that to like the rage of the Hulk. And like by the end, there's like a meal. Like and there's a great ending that I won't reveal in case you see it sometime, but it's, you know, like, the Hulk doesn't always stay the Hulk. And then she figures out this ending to end the act, and it's amazing. And so, like, she, you know, she does Kitty Nights every Sunday at 9 o'clock sharp for what, like seven years?
7 years, I think.
She's missed, she doesn't do two shows a year.
Yeah.
And so, and I think over the years, I countered with her once. She missed maybe two other ones because she was traveling.
Yep.
But that's mind-boggling.
It's amazing.
It's mind-boggling. It's like such a, it's like, and that's a show that, you know, if you got friends in from out of town, mm-hmm. what do you do with them? Bring them to Kitty Nights. Every show there's like a brand new performer.
Mm-hmm.
So like she gives somebody a chance. There's also, it's the show where people can bring that weird act
yep.
and like do it because it's not out of place. Every host I know in the city loves hosting that show.
It's a fun room.
It's so fun. Mm-hmm. And like you show up and she has your lineup written in marker on a card.
A little cat faces drawn
little
on
cat
it.
Faces.
It's adorable.
It's perfect. and like it's just the show is always great. And you're always going to see friends there. And
yeah.
like Pat and Tony are in the front row. And like there's, you know, the people that are there. It's like Cheers, you know.
Yes.
Then she just, she's got, I've seen her do, you know, I don't know, man, probably I'd have to say 40 different acts. When I see another one, I'm always happy to see it
mm-hmm.
again. Maybe the first one I saw her do might have been, if my memory is correct, she has that cheerleader on speed act.
Yes.
Where her face, she does that femme face the whole time. She's just like, ah, and like, I never saw anything like
yeah.
it. It's like she immediately was just, you know, I mean, she can do beautiful, sexy, pretty stuff
mm-hmm.
too. Because she's, I mean, she can move so well and she's so sensual and she's amazing, but like when she does these big crazy physical acts,
she commits, man.
God,
it's beautiful.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And she doesn't realize, like, I don't think she realizes how much she means to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, so I was hosting this past Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and the first two rows of people all showed up with t-shirts with Femme's face on
Shut
it.
Shut up.
And she didn't realize it during her act. So, like, they hit him, and then right when I was announcing her, they all pulled their shirts off and have these shirts there.
Oh.
She did her act. She had sunglasses on. She didn't notice. So I was looking at her on stage right when she was done, and she's, like, poking her head out, and she's just about pissing herself laughing that, like, all these idiots are wearing her face on their chest. Like, she doesn't – I don't think she realizes how important she is,
mm-hmm.
like, how she is – I mean, as a producer
mm-hmm. –
as a performer, and then just as a person, you know, she's, there's just, she blows my mind all the time. I'm honored to be a friend of Femme Appeal. She's unbelievable. And this incredible cook act too, it just like, I laugh, my jaw's on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and I can't believe what I'm looking at. And it's just like, who comes up with an idea like this and then does it?
Mm-hmm.
We all get ideas, but Femme gets an idea, and she knows Sunday at 9 o'clock she can do it
because mm-hmm.
it's her show, and that's I love her. She's amazing.
So that's really the two of the most extreme ends of contemporary burlesque, and
yeah.
especially I know this is where I live and work, but I tend to think there's a very specific New York style, and I think those are you know, the sort of very personal, difficult.
Performance artish,
and yeah. then just these crazy ass, dumb, fun,
like punk rock
performance art
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the other sort of, you know, classic more. I mean, at this point, it sounds funny to say, but traditional, you know, dance based.
I love those too. Like, you know, if there was four acts to bring
mm-hmm.
on the list, there would be one of the. I can think of, you know, a handful of acts that are just. So heartbreakingly beautiful, and the costuming is great,
mm-hmm.
and all that. I just like, to me, these are the ones that resonate with
yeah.
me personally.
Yeah.
You know,
because
it's
sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're the last one that you're throwing on the lifeboat actually isn't a burlesque performance per se, but tell me about that one.
No, it's not. It's Schaefer the Dark Lord's theme from Original Sin. and that was whenever Schaefer would, you know, Schaefer the Dark Lord's an amazing rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Again, another singular person. There's nobody like Schaefer the Dark Lord, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an amazing rapper, and I had a talent crush on him for a long
yeah.
time because I can't do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever he would host Original Sin was I guess it ran for about 6 years
yeah.
in Park Slope at Lucky 13 Saloon. That was Mary Sin and Joe the Shark.
Mm-hmm.
That was their show, co-produced in that weird heavy metal bar. So when he would, when Schaefer would host, he wrote this theme from Original Sin, and you know, it's about at first, like the first verse is like about the show, and about like what it is, and then like there's this whole big bridge where he just like name drops everybody.
Hey, what up, everybody? This song is about my favorite burlesque show in all of New York City. I'm getting a little help on this track from my homegirl, Carrie Underwood. What? Right now, by the light of the moon, you're in a dive called the Lucky 13 Saloon. Rest assured, it's safe to assume pretty soon that utter sexy decadence shall descend on this room. Right here upon this very stage, which admittedly it is a bit of a stretch to call this a stage. But hey, ladies will get naked, shimmy, shake it, it's amazing on the way. Hey, baby, just be patient. Welcome everybody to Original Sin, the most notorious of shows in town's about to begin. The show is so hella epic, yo, it's so full of wind tonight. Alright, belly to the bar and get your whiskey or gin, and prepare to feed your eyes upon a feast full of skin. Buckle up, this fucking bumpy ride's about to begin tonight. Alright. Once upon a time inside the Garden of Eden, the lovely Miss Mary Sin was approached by a demon. He said, "The apples on that tree you see are not to be eaten." Our hero heard the serpent's words, but she didn't believe them. So Mary scrambled up the tree and she started plucking. She ate up half the apples, half she stashed in a bucket. But the largest one she aimed toward the heavens and chucked it. Then she flashed the gods and told them all to suck it. Welcome everybody to Original Sin, the most notorious of shows in town's about to begin. The show is so hella epic, yo, it's so full of wind tonight. Alright, come on, belly to the bar and get your whiskey or gin, and prepare to feed your eyes upon a feast full of skin. Buckle up, this fucking bumpy ride's about to begin tonight. Alright. Now, since I've been coming to Original Sin, I've had some pretty wild times. And I've seen some pretty wild things. But mostly, I've met some pretty wild people. Like who, you might ask? The cast of the show, you know, consistently rocks. I've seen Sherry Magdalene, I've seen Magdalena Fox. I've seen Billy the It and Cherry Pitts and Adam Wren. I've seen Lefty Lucy carry on with reckless abandon. The Reverend Burke Hefner and Veronica Barlow. Sapphire Jones and yo, my man Nelson Lugo. Alert, comma, Amber and Angel, comma, Apathy. Scarlet Spitfire, I've made Poppy T laugh at me. I've taken French lessons from Bonnie Voyage, Rosie La Rouge, and Jenny Say Quoi. Cadabra gets violent, Sunshine demands silence. I've seen Rosie 151 and Victoria Privates. The bubbly Ruby Fizz and Miss Kristen Lee. I've seen all these misfits drinking shots of nipple whiskey. I've seen Corey and Corey and Max and Matt and Joe the Shark. But mostly, I've seen my boy Johnny at the bar. Welcome everybody to Original Sin, the most notorious of shows in town's about to begin. The show is so hella epic, yo, it's so full of wind tonight. Alright, belly to the bar and get your whiskey or gin, and prepare to feed your eyes upon a feast full of skin. Buckle up, this fucking bumpy ride's about to begin tonight. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Original Sin.
For a while, I went to Original Sin probably, for a while I went to every one of them, but I would at least go once a month. Mm-hmm. And like, I was hosting The Moth at Southpaw, and it was the same, and that was, which is another place that's closed.
Well, that is now a gymboree.
It's like a baby gym. Yeah baby Pilates.
Yep.
So like, I would host that at Southpaw, and then hop in a car with like Handsome Brad, and we would go to Original Sin and get there just in time for the show to start. And it was, instead of like going to some bar after a show, I got to go to the awesomest party. And like, it was all, you walk in, it was like bizarro Cheers. Like all your friends were there. Like there'd be 10 of them dressed in the same outfit because they got some weird idea. And then like, we're like, everyone's on a blonde wig. You know what I mean? Like, or like there'd be, I remember seeing like, be like Magdalena Fox and like Victoria Privates, and you know, there'd be like a dozen girls all, and they'd all be wearing like the same underwear, and they'd just show you their underwear. And like, you would just sit there, or well, jammed in the back. I would always stand because I didn't want to, it was tiny. And the stage was literally like a plank of plywood or like a door that was on six paint cans. And it was, Schaefer says it in the song, it's a stretch to call it a stage.
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff I saw in there was, I mean, just people using the room, and there was a pole, and, like, really kind of fucking with the people in the room, mm-hmm. and, like, it was so amazing. So this song, like, for me, brings back those, like, first couple experiences of, like, seeing what burlesque, like, what the community is, mm-hmm. and, like, showing up at this place and, like, being Norm at Cheers, and everybody's like, hey, Peter's here, and, like, everybody's giving you a hug and a kiss, and then, like, you watch the show, and then after that, there was, like, 3 hours of people dancing on the pole,
yep.
and I would sit there, I used to call it the pervert corner, I would just sit there and, like, have, what, like, business meetings.
I'd rather have you in the pervert corner
than help regulate.
We're perverts,
like,
we don't know.
When I get, well, we're all perverts, mm-hmm. but, like, when there'd be that guy that was just staring or touching too much, mm-hmm. then not that I need to be the knight in shining armor, yeah. but I was there to, like, you know, set him straight.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, but and the fringe benefit of that was I got to sit at the pervert corner. It was, mm-hmm. and it was, like, I could just sit and just smile and watch my friends dance around. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was super fun, man.
Yeah.
And, like, man, so, like, you know, that would be a late night, and, you know, Tuesdays were hangover day.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those were my, like, my months for a while. It was, like, the first Monday was OC, the second Monday was BTK, the third Monday was OC again. And so those first, second, and third Tuesdays were just Tylenol and water and a greasy cheeseburger. And don't fucking talk to me for, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. for the rest of the day. But it was, going there, I got first, like, that was the first burlesque show I ever hosted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the place I learned how to deal with hecklers.
Yep.
Like, at first I enjoyed hecklers, and because I love eviscerating an audience member.
Do people ever heckle stories? Have you ever had that happen?
Not necessarily during the story. Well, like, at a burlesque show sometimes, yeah. they'll yell something out.
Yeah.
Like, during a storytelling show, people are respectful. But, you know, in between, they'll yell stuff. Sometimes mm-hmm. at the Moth, there'll be some drunken kid with a Brooklyn hat, like, you know, thinks he's smart, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, he's some idiot from somewhere. And then you gotta shut that down.
Uh-huh.
But then they take it pretty well, and the audience will be on your side.
Yeah.
From hosting burlesque shows, then I got to host storytelling shows, and that's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yep.
That's easy. Like, you know, OC, there's bikers there and stuff.
Oh man, that place got crazy.
You don't know what's gonna happen, you know. And that was I miss it because it was that thing of, like, you know, twice a month you go and just hang out with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is when I first learning what burlesque was and learning my, like, trying to figure out my, I didn't know I had a part in the community, but I was figuring out my part in the community,
mm-hmm.
and, like learning how to we treat each other and learning
yeah.
how we treat each other versus how we treat outsiders and who do you let in and who do you not, and learning about the pseudonyms and the stage
mm-hmm.
names and how important they are, and, you know, learning that the rules are different for this person than they are for this person, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that it's everybody looks out for each other. And it was one of the first times, you know, I can remember, man, that, like, I felt like I had a place where I belonged. I could just be mm-hmm. myself. And, you know, any community's got its problems,
sure.
and belly aching and all that, but that's fine. But it's still, like, OC to me represents, like, a place where it was okay to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I did was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't, somebody would tell me, and then I was like, oh, okay, and then I just wouldn't do that again. And it was like, that was another, like, kind of learning experience for
yeah.
me, you know? I loved it. And then, like, you know, seeing Schaefer do that song, hearing it, and then, you know, getting to know him. I got
yeah.
to be in his video for The Bender,
mm-hmm.
you know, I see him perform around and stuff. And just one day I want to do a guest verse on one of his songs. Schaefer.
Yeah. So it's a small, lifeboat.
Yeah.
And, it's a hard thing to pick, but,
yeah.
What are you bringing of your own to the island?
Well, like, for a burlesque act, I've been mm-hmm. doing more of those lately.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point I might have, like, five acts,
right.
which is more,
yeah.
five more than I ever thought I would. But there's one that I've been doing with Amelia Bear Parts. This is a ventriloquist act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of it.
Yeah.
So it's an act that we started doing. Cindy, Cherry Pitts and Handsome Brad had a show, a variety show they did at the Frigid Festival,
mm-hmm.
like 2 years ago. And so we they asked us if we would do this thing. Figured out that, all right, so I'll be the ventriloquist, and then she's the puppet, and I'm a shitty ventriloquist that lives in my mother's basement, and so I'm terrible at it, but then she comes to life, and then we're like, then what happened? So that she does a strip, and I'm so freaked out, because I'm like this virginal dude that lives in my mother's basement. And she's trying to seduce me, and I'm so freaked out. And then at the end of it, I'm just like catatonic. And then she figures out how to have me turn into the puppet. And then she has me do a striptease. And we do this thing at the end where, like, I take my glasses off and I pull my hair down. For all your listeners, I have luxurious, beautiful hair.
It's very, very flowing.
So, like, you know, I do that, like, Disney movie thing where it's just now I'm the pretty girl. And then, like, you know... We're on the same page, and, like, you know, we have, like, the big dip and kiss, and, you know, and then she walks off, you know, with, you know, controlling my hand and with me over her shoulder, and, like, walks off. And it was really fun because when we were putting the act together, trying to figure out the gender dynamics and trying to figure out what was, you know, what's right and what's wrong and what, you know, what do we, like, is it, who's in charge, and who does anyone have to be in charge, and who, you know, who has the power here, and why do they have the power, and what do they want, and, like, but then also, what do we want? We don't want to add to any existing pool of misogyny or anything, right? So, like, what is this? And I think we figured out the formula of it, that it's fun and harmless rather than being something that's, like, objectifying.
Yep.
And I love doing that act. And, like, she has this other idea that we're going to start working on where I'm a bull and she's a bullfighter and we fall in love. And I'm really, she's a flamenco dancer in real life. So, like, she's going to teach me some moves and we're going to do this whole thing. But it's, you know, I love doing that act so much. It's so fun. We just did it at a benefit at Howling Works last week. And, like, no one knew what the hell they were looking at.
Nice.
So that was good.
I always consider that a success.
I do, too.
And you get to bring somebody with you, a performer with you, to keep you sane and entertained. And who would that be?
Well, you know, there's so many amazing performers. But the one I have to bring, and this isn't necessarily a cop-out because it's... It sounds like it could be, but there's a performer named Legs Benedict, who you may not have heard of, but that's the stage name of my wife. Every once in a while, she'll do an act in Bear, and she's amazing.
Yeah.
She's, you know, beautiful and vicious, like when she's doing burlesque. And so I would bring her because, I mean, honestly, like, some of it, it's not even just... Well, if I said I was going to bring Bunny Buxom, my wife would get mad, you know, and that's part of it. But, like, it's also that, you know, she and I have been together for 17 years, and I don't think I could survive without her, you know. So, like, I would need her there to keep me sane. Like, I would absolutely, you know, and then we could be, you know, it would be like with Blue Lagoon. We could, like, swim around and... And it'd be all right. But that was her stage name came from, you know, we've been together since college. It was a nickname I had for her.
That's delightful.
In college. I was like, girl, you look like a big old player, Legs Benedict. And then it just stuck. And then when I asked her to do burlesque, she was like, I need a name. And she added this list of names. I'm like, and I know this isn't proper. You got to pick your own name. But I was like, baby.
Not always.
You're Legs Benedict. Uh-huh. And she was like, all right, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she's a very patient woman. We had not that long ago. She was moving a jacket. I'm like, you know when, like, you put on a winter jacket and there's an old $10 bill and you're like, oh, it's me. My old winter jacket, a pair of panties fell out of the pocket. And she was like, she called me up. She's like, Peter, move your jacket. There's a pair of panties. I was like, what do they look like? She's like, they're leopard print. I was like, oh, those are Rosies. And it was like from a photo shoot from a while back.
Yep.
And she's like, okay. You know, like, she's so patient. Everywhere else that's grounds for divorce. But she's like, well, this is my husband. He's always been a pervert. I don't want to change him. So I guess he's just going to keep being a pervert. It's really nice.
Yeah, I'm as the long luckiest. As you know who the panties belong to.
Yeah, yeah. There's like, oh, I don't remember. As long as I have a story to go with the panties, I guess exactly. It's okay. But one day I'm making a quilt out of panties, and that's
yeah.
Yeah, imagine how soft that'll be.
It'll be beautiful.
And she has instructions to make it line my casket.
Oh.
Like that'll be. So it has a lot of. That's my plan anyway. We'll see.
Good to have a plan.
I have about a third of a quilt so far.
Excellent.
I'm doing all right.
Well, we'll bring the panty quilt along with us. We'll make room in the lifeboat for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you for joining me on the island, even though it's freezing. We'll pretend like it isn't and, you know, wait for the summer.
Thank you, Nancy. It was an absolute honor.